Negative Canberra The Motorsport Show is proudly supported by Procarts Paraka, Red Mill Bakery, Movisoft Trailer Hire, Enphase Microinverters, Radio Italia Uno, QuickBooks, and TD Racing.
By being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver. I race designed to win.
It's time for Negative Canberra.
Down the inside, Hamilton sees it coming. It's a lead lunge by Verstappen, who takes the lead of the race.
If it's motorsport you want, then this is the place to be. All of the latest results, analysis, and interviews.
And a great start for car number 11. Delberto's got away beautifully at the start of the great race.
Right now on Radio Italia Uno 87.6. And now it's time to introduce your hosts, Jamie Lemure and Lee Harrison.
Welcome to a special episode of Negative Canberra The Motorsport Show, proudly supporting the Scuderia Ferrari Club Adelaide. This episode is quite close to all of us in the four-stroke community as we interview Tim Murphy, who was the founder of T4 Kartworks, but also a major player in the rollout of four-stroke racing here in South Australia. It was a pleasure to sit with him whilst I was in Sydney to catch up with Tim and learn a little bit more about who he is and also the story of what led to T4 Kartworks. We really hope you enjoy the show as we learn and discover more about Tim Murphy and T4 Kartworks.
Tim Murphy, welcome, finally, to Negative Canberra The Motorsport Show. It's been a long time coming, but given the fact here in South Australia and I suppose potentially in November, it's four-stroke season, where we've got titles up for grabs in South Australia and also unofficial national titles, if you want to call it that, it's probably the perfect time to welcome in the godfather of four-stroke racing, mate.
Thank you. Long-time listener, first-time caller, Jamie. Godfather, yes, it's quite the title, I must say. Thank you for having me on.
No, look, pleasure, man. I'll probably go public, and I know I've done it with to you before, but it's probably a good opportunity to say thank you. Thank you for opening the door for me, I guess, for club karting. I mean, it was your generosity and Ben Onaway's indirectly as well that really kind of opened the door for me to get cracking in club karting and enjoy the fun that is four-stroke racing. Ironically enough, I've stumbled onto those Barossa video clips from Kart Sport recently on an old laptop, and my God, was I shit house that day.
That kart had a real tendency to switch ends quite easily, though, I must admit.
Still, the brakes were so sensitive, like you just had to brush them.
And away Ben loved it. Astonishingly fast under brakes, but very difficult. It was a early pre-IPK Formula K kart. Quite twitchy under the handling, fast if driven right. Incredibly powerful brakes, but very difficult to modulate.
Yeah. Even the Torini, I mean, they were the sort of the first generation Torini motors that they were on that go-kart, because that was pretty much when four-stroke had only just really sort of
within the first 50 made, yeah.
Yeah. And even the onboard footage now compared to some of the engines I hear now, the motor sounds completely different. Like, it must be the camera or something, but it feels and sounds different.
Yeah, we used to run them a bit richer back then as well. And probably tightened up on barrel clearances and things a little bit since then as well in terms of stack of how I set carts up. But certainly Torini have continued to, I suppose, refine some of their manufacturing process. There's been a few hurdles along the way. It's not been all smooth sailing, but I think at the moment they're turning out some really nice engines.
Yeah, absolutely. Mate, this is your chance to tell the world about you. So it's a chance to understand who Tim Murphy is. And we can start as far as nappies. It's up to you. but then also it's good to understand the background of what has become also your side hustle, which is T4. And that's come on in leaps and bounds in the last couple of years as well. So, yeah.
It's become a big part of what I do. I, as a young lad, I grew up in Mildura in Northwest Victoria. And I always loved the concept of go-karts. It was just something I always wanted to do. And I think from the first time someone took me hire karting, one of my parents was to take me out hire karting, they loved it. Now, Mildura's got some good pedigree in karters. At the time, I went through school with Todd and Rick Kelly. I was just 1 year behind Rick in school. And he drove a Ford, just to be clear. It was an XR6 Ute, flamethrower on the exhaust. Nice. So I used to go down to the local hire kart place on like a Tuesday or Wednesday night. This is when I was about maybe 8 years old, 8 or 9 years old. I don't know how old I was. I was only just old enough to reach the pedals. I might have been a little bit old, no more than 10 anyway. It was Dowson's who ran the place. Dave Dowson's old man running the show. I used to go out there and just go with guys that did a social thing, a bit like what Paraka do. I think there's in the week social karting now, not dissimilar to the SFCA karting nights. And it was a once a week thing. And my mum would just drop me off there and come back an hour and a half later and pick me up. And we'd do four heats and, you know, shoot the breeze with a bunch of rough blokes. And if you imagine what karters are like it was no different then. I learned a lot of choice words for a young kid, I think, at the time. But I wasn't that quick at first. And one night, no one else rocked up. An old man Dowson picks me up and he says, "Oh, come follow me around the track." And at first, I didn't understand what he's doing. I kept going past him. He's like, "No, follow me." I followed him and I finally worked out how racing lines worked. And that season of his social competition, I put myself into about second position and I loved it. And it only went on for a year or so, but I really enjoyed it. And I hassled my parents to get into karting ever since. Now, Dad's words were, "Oh, we don't have money for stuff like that." And, you know, I just believed him. I was a pretty well-heeled kid and just went, "Oh, no worries." Now, just to clarify, my dad's a doctor.
Yep.
So telling me that there's not enough money in the kitty to go go-kart racing wasn't the truth, but I'm sure he had other priorities in life. However, one day on a family trip to Melbourne, he said to me, "Hey, I know you've wanted a go-kart, you know, why don't you get something that you can drive around your grandparents' farm," which is a little place called Patchy Wallach in the Mallee, about 50 kilometres out of Oyen. So all places that mean nothing. They had thousands of hectares out there. And so I got a copy of the local trading post from that week while we're in Melbourne on a Saturday morning and got Dad to call all these people for these go-karts. So only one guy answered. And I'm like, "Oh, it doesn't sound like the best one, but let's go. We'll go have a look at it." We got there. This is the worst go-kart you've ever seen in your life. Like, the thing had been made by a kid doing VCE or something. He was a year 10 project or a year 11 project, and it was square tube RHS. The corners were bolted together with plates, like not welded. It had like sack trolley wheels reinforced. It had a Victor two-stroke engine on it, had a school chair for a seat. And I did not care. I was buying it. No, it didn't matter. It was fast too. Like, the thing was relatively quick.
It probably still went better than the SQ.
It went for a while.
Yeah.
So we got out to the farm and I used to just go and just drive laps of that farm. And even at that age, I was trying to nail every apex of every corner around a gatepost or whatever it was, and just loved it. And it's something I always wanted to do. I just never did it in my young years. I messed around that thing. That cart broke almost every time I drove it. And, my granddad was a pretty industrious wheat farmer, and, you know, he invented chain tensioners for it and machined up new hubs for it and things that actually made it not break as easily. And, you'd hate to have done a wheel alignment on it. It would have had about 15 centimetres of toe outer again. Like, it was pretty astonishing. Eventually the motor packed it in and replaced it with the Briggs & Stratton. This is, came the love of the four-stroke engine, because all of a sudden I've gone to this unreliable old Victor to this Briggs thing that I could start myself as a young kid and jump in the cart and go for a drive. And I just loved it. It's just the best thing ever. So fast forward many years and moved to Adelaide to come to university and do industrial design. I thought I'd become a car stylist or designer. A, I'm probably not good enough to do it. B, the whole automotive industry fell down around my ears while I was finishing that off. So I ended up with a minor in furniture design. I did a lot of stuff, spent a lot of time at university in the workshop, though. So all sorts of machining and rapid prototyping and tooling, things like that, covered in that that degree. And I wasn't really able to find work doing what I wanted to do straight away afterwards. So I started getting into the manufacturing space, working in injection molding factories and things, got into QA and a few other things through that. And ultimately decided to settle down into a full-time job and just fell into the first thing I could grab, which I gravitated to something that I felt comfortable with, which was selling lawnmowers, all with four-stroke engines on them.
Yep.
And so for 3 years, I sold lawnmowers, ride-ons, pushmowers, whatever. But one of the mechanics there, a bloke called Jiffy, he and I started, we got a really good deal on a couple of Briggs Vanguard engines, which were made at the time by Mitsubishi and used heavily in American kart racing. So ARC and Comp Cams and you know, all these other companies that still make parts for racing four-stroke engines today were making beautiful billet rods and dual valve springs and, you know, bigger stainless valves and all this stuff. And I bought a couple of these engines. I got a bunch of stuff from America, and I worked with a guy called Troy Worsley at the Butterfly Farm out in the middle of New South Wales. Troy, interestingly enough, was someone that's, I think, was involved in the very early days of Torini development as well. But he was just known as a guy that built these wild four-stroke engines that were being used at these tracks in New South Wales. And they're making 30-plus horsepower out of these Vanguard things. And I built one up. I went and found the cheapest chassis I could find. I actually went into John Caravas's shop one day and said, oh, I'm looking for a really cheap old chassis. And he said, I've got a guy that might be able to help you out. A bloke called Kevin called me that night, just called me, said, John Caravas said, you're looking for a chassis. I've got one for $400. You want it? Yeah. Yeah. I'll come have a look. I had no idea what it was, right? The thing was ancient. What it actually was a Yamaha RC100S built in the Yamaha factory in Japan. They were sold as a complete running entity with a KT100 on them. He'd bought it for the Sandcast S that was on it and just wanted to move the chassis on. It had already been modified over the years, but still had things like original two-piece wheels and various other stuff that I had no idea was so vintage. Like, I didn't realize how old the thing was. And I pulled it all apart and made it all beautiful. And I bolted on, at first, a dead stock Briggs. Took it out to Port Gawler. Drove about 15 metres down the straight, hit the rev limiter at 3,800 RPM, realised I was still at walking pace and went, this isn't going to work. Pegged out, went out and found a bit of dirt out at Port Gawler and pegged out a tiny little track that worked for the gearing we had. And mates and I did time trials with it for the rest of the day and had good fun. Yep. And that's when we started building the fast engine. And that point in time, you could actually take your own private carts to Paraka. You could take a cart to Paraka. And I was booting it around there with KTs and stuff and keeping up. And that engine ended up doing about 55 hours, revved to about 8,000 RPM, probably made about 12 horsepower. So ultimately, almost a Supermax type engine in terms of what it did.
Yep.
Ended up selling it to a bloke on a farm at Inglewood. After doing that for enough years and getting my time down to, I think, a 37 flat in the four-stroke at Port Gawler or whatever it was, I decided I wanted to race. And I finally got a job, a day job that could pay for that. And first thing I did was get myself into a go-kart. I picked up a beautiful brand-new Haas rolling chassis from Ian Williams' shop, which was there in consignment. Ian wasn't particularly positive about the thing. It's like, I don't know, some bloke imported them, doesn't know what he's doing with them, whatever. Yeah. It's a brand new cart. It was a nightmare. Like, I broke it just about every time I drove it. The chassis was made out of super thin steel and just didn't deal with my driving, that's for sure. And it was difficult to set up. Did 4 meetings in it, but I ultimately moved it on pretty quick. But also being frugal, I managed to get a deal at the time on a brand new 125 engine, a PRD Fireball. And boldly going where no one else went and rocked up with that thing. And at the time, it was really competitive. Most people didn't even have X30s yet that were driving 125s. This is in 2011. Most people were still driving RL Leopards, way pre-Evo Rotax. And the Fireball with its restrictor size was just, it was a weapon.
Yep.
And
what made it so good, like in comparison to the other two strokes that were was up against?
It had a bigger restrictor. It wasn't a particularly good engine. I just think that the parity for the restrictor size wasn't that great. It was an easy engine to drive, but it was as much of a nightmare as you could imagine they would be. Like, it would break the back of the piston above the ring off every 5 or 6 hours. And I could tell when I had to do it. But, you know, the thing was in at Lightning Carts being rebuilt every couple of weeks, you know. so it was pretty interesting. So I think in my very first race meeting, and, you know, I reinforce this to people starting all the time, like, they're like, oh, I don't know if I'm ready to race, you know. Well, everyone wants to get down to a fast time. I'd got down to a fast time to the point that I was actually well faster than the guys on track with me at the time in my first race meeting. And they're like, wow, this dude's flying. Well, I'm on P's. I had to start off the back. Got through turns 1 and 2 at Barossa, and I'm going down the back straight, and these two guys in front of me are tussling each other, and they're slow as, and they moved apart before the kink left before the gum tree. And I went to go straight between them because I'm like, I just drive down the middle of them. No worries. Of course, they moved straight back together at the kink and hit me. I went flying over the two of them, dropped the cart straight on the ground, broke both tie rods, dropped the thing on its waist, dragged the whole cart along the ground, broke off a brake hose. The whole works, a massive crash. And, you know, half a lap into my first ever race, managed to do the next heat by getting some tie rods and stuff. Didn't realize the brakes were damaged at this time. Completed heat 2 with no brakes. Got the brakes bled up and working kind of for heat 3. Fouled a plug on the roll around, and that was my day. That was a 3-heat day back in 2011 because I had so many entries, and there was nothing more to it.
Well, I bet you exasperation by the end of it, going, man, this is probably a tougher gig than what I thought it was going to be.
Oh, mate, I was hammered. I've been there for like 12 hours, and I'm like, I'm getting nowhere, you know. Yeah. And I think my next race meeting, I did a lot better. It was at Southern, but I had a failure, like a brake, a throttle cable snapped or something. And I fast learnt that to win races, you had to finish races. And a big part of that for me was making sure my go-kart was prepared in such a manner that it would never let me down. I pride myself on never having mechanical failures anymore. And if I have a mechanical failure, it's going to be something that's out of my control, not because I left a bolt loose or because a part was half worn out or something like that. You know, always trying to make sure my gear's fresh and clean and well lubricated, everything's spinning properly and working. So I did a couple of years, 2011, 2012, did heaps in restricted race, you know, 25 race meetings in a year and a half. Then had a child and took a few years off. Didn't do much for a few years. And really, you know, I ended up moving up to the hills into meadows, and I was really missing it, wanted to get back into it. And I looked at it all again, and I still had my, at the time, I had an Arrow AX8 with all AX9 bodywork on it and stuff, but I loved that car. It's great. And I realized it was going to be pretty difficult, well, I thought at the time, to make the current rule set and make the rear bumper fit and whatever else. So I decided to move it on. And then I decided, actually, it's going to be a lot cheaper to race dirt. So I jumped in the dirt cart and raced 4 meetings. Look, if the track went hard and dry, there was a black line on the track, I'd beat everyone. Yep. The second it looked like a bitumen track and you could actually drive the cart straight, no one could touch me. Mm. The second the water track and grader came out, forget it. I was last. Didn't matter where I started. I just couldn't drive it. And I had a really cracker of a race meeting, you know, on a hard track at Adelaide Dirt Kart Club, and went from, like, this is only my second meeting or something. I went from 17th to 2nd in the final. And the races only go for 45 seconds. Like six lap heats and 8 lap finals, and they're only 20 seconds a lap. So, you know, you don't have much time to get it done.
And half the time you spend sideways anyway. You just sort of
you never straighten the thing up. So, but the thing is, at the time, you know, with a young child and stuff, the danger element of that was a real issue. And in my last meeting on dirt, I was coming through from the back because they reverse grid.
Yep.
And I was coming through from the back at Adelaide, following a guy through who was quick. And we were going through together. And he went to go around the outside of the guy at a corner. And, of course, the car on the inside of him swung the tail out harder.
Mm-hmm.
And they touched wheels. And the guy cartwheeled, and he fell out of the front of the go-kart while the thing was in the air, and landed on his head and flipped over. Well, he broke his hip and his femur on his right leg and his left ankle.
Wow.
And, you know, and on dirt, you know, when there's a rollover, everyone just knows to stop. You red flag, you stop where you are. And all the drivers just walk over and just go stand around the guy who's, like, you know, like a rag doll on the floor. Yeah. You know, St. John's wander over with several green whistles and you'll stand there till SA ambulance come to move them. And I was like, geez, I don't think this is what I want to do. And went straight home, put up the car for sale, got myself straight back into an Arrow X4 125, went back out the next month and set the lap record at Barossa in restricted medium, which stayed there until last year. Jed Stanton knocked it off. I was straight back into it and just loved it. As immediately just felt like home. So 2016 onwards, I haven't looked back and I've been straight, you know, in the cart solid since then. And by the end of 2017, numbers in restricted were looking really poor in medium. Fine for light guys, but heavier guys, it was a real struggle. Mm. One day, I think about in November 17, sitting at my desk at work, and I got a message from someone, check this out. It was actually from a guy called Jake Bruson, who was racing with us back then. And Jake's like, check this out. Karting Australia has just released four strokes for next year. And I just about fell off my chair. I don't think I worked for the rest of the day. I ran around and I read every piece of information I could get. Where am I going to get one? How am I going to get it? What do I need to do? I was just shocked. I wanted to know what the tyre was. And at the time, we were all chasing around trying to find every bit of information we could. We got told there was going to be two engines, and one was this unheard of thing called a Tirreni. And everyone knew about the Briggs & Stratton local option 206. The Tirreni, what's this? It's got a billet rod. It does this. It's made by SB Tools. How interesting. So I immediately set about getting myself a rolling chassis. And it wasn't actually until that moment that I sold my old Briggs Port Gawler cart. I said, I'll sell that to buy a four-stroke race engine, no worries. So I flogged that off, ordered a Tirreni, and I got the first customer Tirreni in the country. And that was it. I was hooked from then. And we were allowed to put them on the track from the 1st of January 2018, and I was there at 9 a.m. at Monado on the 1st of January 2018, started my Tirreni and started running it in, cooked the clutch within the second session, because the run-in procedure is very clearly wrong at this point in time. And I'd also worked out through fitting the thing that the engine mount offset plate's not drilled correctly, and it definitely doesn't work on any go-kart except for the one they had tested it on. And to this day, they've never changed that. It drives me nuts. So I've lost count of the number of Tirreni plates that I've had to re-drill to make them fit to fit go-karts. But I've actually got a stack of them here at the moment. I was considering actually drilling some up and putting them in an exchange program on my website so that people can just order a pre-drilled one. These days you've got lots of options. You can put a nice Odental engine mount on, or you can run a CRG one, whatever, which should give you the offset, and Tirreni have approved those straight up to work within the engine. You don't have to run their plate if you don't want to now. But I recognise that it wasn't a straightforward process to get them onto the cart. People were not going to do particularly well with that. So I was like, this will be interesting to see how people go. I waited for the very first race meeting that year. I rocked up with both my go-karts, my 125 and my four-stroke, and I put the four-stroke out. I was the only person they put me out with open performance, and I drew grid slot one. by the first turn, I was last, unsurprisingly. But you know what? The times that I did that day, and that was at Barossa also, the times I did that day still stand as some of my fastest ever four-stroke times at Barossa. Really enjoyed that. You might remember Zahn driving that same go-kart, the FA cart that I had at the time. Go-kart.
He's actually still got it as a profile picture on his
Facebook. He does. It is still Zahn's profile picture on Facebook.
How did it feel though? Being all of a sudden, like, you're the lone wolf, you know, you've gone on to this new category and you've literally rolled the dice and said, I'm going to be the one to have a crack. But at the same token, you copped a lot of grief. It's all tongue in cheek. I get it. But at the same time, I mean,
some of it wasn't though.
Yeah.
So there was tongue in cheek, but there was a lot of real behind the words that were being said. And, you know, I actually had to attend meetings with the clubs. Like, I was going to committee meetings in December 2017 to say, I'm buying a four-stroke next year. You're going to have to offer this class, and I'm going to make this class go big. And I'm going to make sure that at the first race meet, I'm going to have to beg you to offer the class. I want the class there.
Yep.
And they're all like, it won't take off. We'll see what happens. You know, whatever, mate, you know. And we'll see. But, you know, I don't know if it was just people just used to what they're used to. It's not the purest of karting for a lot of people. But, you know, I remember coming off the track that that very first race meeting where I'd just driven it around by myself, and Ian Williams' words to me were, "You just did more damage to this sport than Karting Australia have done in the last 3 years." And at that time, Karting Australia had just annoyed everyone, you know. And I said, "Mate, I think it's a bit harsh." But to see him out there now supporting Donnie with the four stroke now, Ian Williams built custom four stroke left side engine chassis now, you know, how the tables have turned.
The irony, mate. The irony.
Yeah. So to go from that, just me, it took me quite a while to get anyone else out there. But Duncan Gavin, who was the bloke who was racing restricted medium with me, was like, "Well, there's no one left in medium now. We're over." Mm. He's like, "Well, I'll have to come race with you." He bought an engine. We got him going. Ben committed. We got Ben going. And then I built a second cart and just started offering it to people. And at Karts Sport meetings, you know, we offered karts. We just tried to make sure there was four of us at every race meeting. You know, if someone couldn't be there, we'd just give our go-kart to someone. And we figured the more people see it and the more people see more of them. And we go out on practice days and the four of us would be locked together for 10 laps at a time. And it's just such great fun because the parity was there. And look, I loved it. So I started off with the Torini engine because I could get one. I couldn't get a Briggs engine at all. They weren't available at first. Anyway, so the next year, a huge injection into the sport came with the Scuderia Ferrari Club. As you guys came on board, and all of a sudden, a bunch of people who we'd never seen before all of a sudden have come straight from nowhere into four-stroke karting. And that was that next real step that pushed numbers into the class. And all of a sudden now, people are asking about four-stroke. It's starting to make people take notice to see what's happening. We've got a tyre that's lasting 3 to 7 race meetings, depending on how long you want to push it, you know. It's interesting seeing that these days, you know, people are restoring the same tyre and people are changing them more often now because they're getting more competitive or, you know, but ultimately we've got a good tyre. And, you know, it's that the numbers started to go up and more interest in the class. And during just at the start, I think, you know, so this is, you know, early days, 2019, Jamie, is that right? You guys started into it? 19 would have been.
2018, 2019, I think. The debut of the club's team was a kart sport at the Barossa in 2019. Yep.
Yeah,
no, you're right.
That'd be right. 2019. Yeah. Yep. So by the end of 18, I realised that people are coming to me asking me about these karts and saying, "Hey, you know, where can I get an engine? What do I do?" And then the second I'd get an engine, how do I fit it? You know, what else do I need? Where do I get this from? Where do I get this strange throttle cable from? How do I stop my chain falling off? How do I do this? How do I do that? Mm. Okay, lots of questions. I decided to start. In fact, I got a request from Sam Mutinen to build up a cart for him. That was the first person that ever paid me to build a cart. I just charged him a little bit of labor and the exact cost of parts. I suddenly realized I could probably do this as a bit of a business. Started like detailing people's carts, working stuff up. And it wasn't until quite literally New Year's Eve, it was actually the 1st of January 2019, up after New Year's Eve, after a few drinks, and just went, "Nah, let's do it." Registered the business name, sat there designing logos, registered the website, did everything 1st of Jan, like between about 1 and 3 a.m. on that date, everything happened and T4 became a thing. And I started to advertise myself a little bit and just help out anyone with four-stroke stuff. And I think between then and now, I've probably sold about 65 engines, four-stroke engines. And to come from me at the start of 2018 racing by myself to, you know, to now, with I think last year, I think over 80 different people raced in a four-stroke in South Australia. And we're talking, you know, having identities like Paul Pittam, who used to race with Daniel Ricciardo and like is a 23 times state and national champion. And even, you know, people like Dave Rinaldi coming across and racing four-stroke, who was a total guru of the KA100 era. And, you know, lots of people that you never thought would get into a kart. You know, people like Matt Hall coming across and racing, and you know, Brett from Southern getting into a kart for the Enduro last year, and all these people that have been like, you know, anti four stroke to the max, and all of a sudden they're racing a kart. It's just been phenomenal.
Yeah, and the best part is that someone like Brett has been, you know, he'd be the first person that would be anti-four-stroke. But then as soon as he got out of that go-kart in the first practice session for that enduro, split watermelon smile, and he was raving on about it for the whole weekend. So
he loved it.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. Helped it when he was competitive, of course. But
he was fast, man.
Yeah, I know. But the thing I found as well was it's just so much fun because it's so simple. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to worry about fuel mixture, minimal tuning on a carburetor. You know, the overall overhead costs initially when you start up is really cheap. You just rock up. Yeah, you got to do a little bit of basic setup work and stuff like that because that's still learning the art.
It's still a go-kart,
right?
Kart setup's no different.
Yep. But for those that aren't as mechanically inclined, like, say, myself, I'm not the best with the tools. I'll openly admit it. It's the perfect class. You know, just a bit of a tweak here, a bit of a tweak there, and away you go.
But you can set and forget it, right? Like, I can set your engine up. You lube your chain and make sure your chain's tensioned and keep putting fuel in the thing. Change the oil every couple of race meetings. To do anything. If it stops working, walk over to me and I'll work out what's going on. We'll fix it. It's pretty much two things, right? You've either got a failed fuel pump or something blocked in your carby. That's the two things, right? If you're ever going to come over to me on a race day and say, oh, my Torini won't start, check your fuel pump, check your carby. That's it. There's only needling the carby, failed fuel pump. Yep. Otherwise, they work.
Exactly right. But, mate, I guess where to here from T4? I mean, you've gone up to this point. You've got customers nationally, I'm assuming, not just in SA?
Yeah, so funnily enough, so one of the things that I think probably helped me grow the business quite a lot was at the start of 2019 as well, I started 4SS Kart Races on Facebook, and you can certainly look up 4SS Kart Races. That group, the way I started it was by finding anyone that had a 4SS race result throughout 2018 in the whole country, by going through Speed Hive from CMS and stuff like that. Yep. And I personally messaged each one of these people, stalked them on Facebook and said, join this group. It's all about four strokes. And by the end of it, we had 150 people and they all told their mates. And that group's got 1,700 people in it now or something. It's ridiculous.
Oh, wow.
And it's really quite big.
I didn't know that. That's massive.
So when I started that, the very first guy to race a four-stroke in Australia, I reckon, outside of Queensland, was a bloke called Richard Druger in New South Wales. Yeah. And Druger's is a household name within karting because if you're on any of the karting classifieds pages, you'll always see him selling stuff because he's a wheeler and dealer. You always get yourself a good deal. Reliable seller. Get on him. Yeah. So he helped me set it up. And we chatted. He offered me way back in the day. He's like, you know, I've got an account with IKD, he tells me. He says, if you ever want a Briggs motor, I'll do you a really good deal. Mm-hmm. And he actually said to me he'd sell me one at cost. So he's now an admin on that page because I just got sick of admitting people into the page and whatever else. And you know, I started running track records for the whole of the country, which I must admit has now got bigger than I can really manage. It's a huge piece, but I've got a better format on the website now that runs it and stuff. But it all just got bigger than I ever expected. But because of people like Richard, I've actually got a real following in central New South Wales. So throughout the guys that race in karting New South Wales there, I sell sprockets, sprocket protectors, but not only that, just spare parts and bits and pieces because they don't have local kart dealers in a lot of these places, Parks, Orange, all through there. And a lot up into Queensland. I've done a lot of work with Coolum Karts in Queensland. I actually got them going. It's quite hard to get an account, particularly with, say, DPE for Arrow stuff. And they really wanted to sell Arrow karts. And, you know, I worked with DPE and Ken at Coolum Karts to be able to get him moving karts up in Queensland, and he's now got his own account with DPE, and we still trade bits and pieces between us. I developed my own sprocket protectors because there was nothing on the market that met the Australian rule book that was thick enough, that was strong enough, that had a spacer ring rather than having to stack a bunch of nuts and spend 15 minutes changing a sprocket. I started cutting sprockets locally, like getting engineers to guillotine cut them, and I'd then sandblast my logo onto them after vinyl cutting a mask and then punch all the numbers in. I did over 480 sprockets manually like that before moving them to production overseas. So I've in the last year moved to custom production of my sprockets, all to my CNC design, all the tolerances and everything, and specified. They're Orange, they match T4, they've you know, the number fonts, even in the T4 font, like, yeah. And those brackets are wicked. They're so nice. EDM wire cut anodized afterwards, like, beautiful stuff. Yeah. In terms of where I want to go with T4, I love making the little bits and pieces. So I can tell you now, I'll give you a sneak preview for listeners of the pod. There is a T4 curb rider in development. That'll be coming out hopefully in the next few months. I've been making some tooling for that to try and manufacture them. And I'll be starting manufacturing them myself at first, see how we go. There's just not enough volume to really get into big manufacture. A lot of people doing a lot of 3D printed stuff for carts, but I just feel like you need that robustness of something that's made out of a solid piece of, you know, HTPE or acetal or whatever it be. So slightly different design to everything else that's out there. Curb riders always seem heinously overpriced to me. They've just hit $115 for a set of three through St. George, and I just can't get my head around that. Yeah, and I feel like I'm rorting people when I have to charge them that. So I want to put something out there at, you know, a far better price that does just as good of a job. So that'll be coming.
It's really cool that you're tying in your background, like when you were younger and your exposure to when you were studying and all your machining and stuff like that, to do something that you really love doing.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
The industrial design stuff, like, I loved that course, right? Like, I think I knew by halfway through the course I was never going to get a job, but I loved what I was doing anyway. I loved what I was learning. You know, I can use any piece of equipment in any workshop anywhere pretty much, and have a really good understanding of tooling and tolerances and rapid prototyping and concept drawing and working out how to get things from concept to reality. Even down to working with suppliers overseas and things like that, which has come in handy. I mean, my day job, I work in procurement. So contracts and supplier negotiation is what I do all day, every day. So T4 fits outside of that somehow. Most days after work, I'm flat out now packing orders from the website or cutting numbers for someone or, you know, building a go-kart in the shed. All the local couriers know me. I've trimmed my tree out the front to fit the direct express truck in so that he can back right in with his tailgate and drop carts straight in the carport.
I recently went through that experience too. One of our members ended up buying a KF cart through Patricia Course, and I got it delivered to my house, and yeah, I had to help him get the you've seen my driveway, so I had to help the guy move the pallet up the driveway, and it stayed there for a couple
of days.
Is that
a brand new that go-kart?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's Chris LaRocca's KF. So he's making
his debut. Yeah, mate, I saw the picture the other day. Yeah,
he's making his debut at it'd probably be Festival State Cup. So wow. We've got another guy that's coming out. He's got an FA, so there'll be an FA 4-stroke now. That'll be Ed Scousey. Felipe, the one you built the Kubica. Well, his father's now coming in. He's got an FA. So
they're still using the Kubica Cup.
Yeah, Felipe's still using the Kubica. He loves it. You know, it's just a chance for him to get out there and have a bit of a fang. It's a great little car.
It's a good car.
Yeah. So,
big, strong front end.
Man, your fingerprint on the grid is everywhere. Like, you built my first go-kart. And the thing that stands out for me is just the attention to detail and the finish. You know, like, there is not one go-kart that I've seen that is not mint, you know, in terms of attention to detail, even just how the cabling is all, you know, cable tied properly and all the lengths are cut precisely, and just all that little attention to detail is really cool. And that, you know, people get drawn to that, you know, people get, you know, because of the quality of workmanship, you know, and, you know, you get what you pay for in that game.
No, I appreciate it, Jamie. I love it. I think I couldn't do this if I didn't love it, you know. I really enjoy putting go-karts together, and I feel privileged when someone orders a nice new go-kart off me. I feel so privileged to get this brand new thing and get to put it together. Like, I'm so excited when I pull a new kart out of the box. I mean, I had my first Arrow. I've done two Arrow X6s now, and when I pulled the first one out of the box, it's just like, it's like a kid in a candy store, you know?
Yeah.
One thing that does surprise me...
They never look the same again.
No, generally not. The first guy that picked up an X6 said, don't put a sticker kit on it, I'm only learning. He goes, I'll put that on later.
Oh, yeah.
Smart man. One of the things that I suppose surprises me is just how many complete four-stroke packages that I have built up for people that I've never seen again.
Yep.
There is a lot of these things sitting out there in sheds that are ready to race. Some of them in, you know, some of them are really nice packages too. So there's a lot of carts out there, and it's finally getting to that point now, whereas if you want to get into racing this, you can look at finding yourself a secondhand package or a secondhand engine or whatever it be.
Yeah. What would contribute to the people not actually getting out there to race? You know, as in the, I mean, because there'd be what, I'd guess maybe 30, 40 maybe go-karts between, say, kart sport and ones that have littered around.
There's more. It's more like 50. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And there are some people that only race kart sport. But in terms of people not getting out there, sometimes people come in to get into sport. People look at the cost of a go-kart and they go, oh, I can afford a go-kart. Tim's going to get me into a kart for $3,800. Great. But then they just don't factor in everything else. You know, you need a race suit, you need your gloves, you need your boots, you need your helmet, you need a license, you need a club membership. And you actually have to pay attention to do those things. It's not just straightforward. You have to actually work out how to go do it, how to arrange it. You know, do an observed license test. You've got to be driven to get into karting. We don't make it easy. And that's why kart sport does so well at bringing people to the sport, right? Because I could say to you, hey, Jamie, come jump in one of my karts. And, you know, I could say it to any mate of mine, if I want to go to a kart sport meeting, anyone can jump in a go-kart, but we just don't have it set up like that, yeah? And that sort of brings me, I think, to the next piece of T4. And if I can drag myself away from my day job, even a day a week, potentially, I'd love to go down to three or four days a week. And what I'd like to do is park myself at go-kart clubs, perhaps every Friday or whatever it be, and book people in for, hey, you want to try karting, come down. So there's a few different things around in terms of the way the SUP regs are set up now around come and try days, where we can run it under that. But there's also a thing within Karting Australia called a dealer trade license, where dealers can actually enable people to try karts on track. There's a fair bit of cost behind that, but it's something I'd like to do. And so I want to be able to get people to try go-karting in a simpler way, cut all the red tape out of it. You don't have to go to anywhere and join up to anywhere or anything else. You can come out, pay me a small fee, jump into a cart we've got right there, drive it, see what it feels like on a real racetrack with the same engine and with the right tyre, and then decide if you want to join. If you want to do it, then we'll set you up. And then if I'm at the track for that time, that probably brings me into the next part, which is starting to do driver development. And I find with four-stroke, and I think this has always been the same with all karting, people either come into karting, they've got a bit of a knack, they find their own way and they're pretty quick, relatively quickly, they've just got to learn racecraft. Or they struggle for years and they really have to try and dig deep to find that pace and really understand it. And the people that are doing that, some of them are really dedicated to having their kart set up right and all those sorts of things. They just need more time on track, understanding you've got to hit this point. You've got to drive into here faster. You've got to stop dragging the brake. Roll time's important, you know.
Yep.
Understanding not to get back on the pedals too early, all that sort of stuff.
That's the biggest difference I found, obviously, given the fact that we've got a pretty big high kart background, was understanding how much grip the slicks have actually got and how much you can let the kart roll through the corner compared to, say, the high kart, because they're so much more nimble, so much more lighter, so much more flexible as well. And that's where it clicked with about things like corner speed and all that momentum. You know, it's certainly a different driving style to what it would be to a two-stroke in that regard, because you've got the power band to get you out of strife.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest thing in racing a 4-3 is corner speed. Funnily, I was going to say two things is... The biggest thing to getting someone fast is understanding how fast you can go through a corner. People just do not have that much trust in a tyre, in a tyre, in the kart, whatever it be. The other thing is I find in the four-stroke racing that the gap is bigger in terms of between drivers at first than it is, say, in a 1-2-5. And it's because of what you said. You don't have that horsepower there to just drive you out of the corner if you screw up. Yep. You actually, the way you drive the go-kart around every bend and manage it through the track is super critical. The probably the number one critical thing within four-stroke racing is release. You've got to have the cart free off the corner. You don't want the axle bound up. You've got to make sure that inside tire is not dragging. You've got no diff. You've got to get it out of there. The same in every go-kart, but in a four-stroke, having it free on exit is just so critical.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got a really good association with DPE. Able to say that they've tapped into your intel to help them with stuff as well? That's a pretty good relationship to have.
Yeah, look, the karting industry in Australia is really interesting. I got a leg up to get into a dealership at all, interestingly enough, by Briggs & Stratton. Yep. So part of this story that goes untold is that during 2019, I was in touch with a guy called David Klaus from Briggs & Stratton, who was the head of Briggs Racing in America. And I said to him, I said, your engine's not selling over here. Like, why not? I said, well, no one's got any confidence that it's fast. No one knows what's doing. The importer doesn't appear to be really pushing it. And, it's just not happening. He's like, what do you think? I said, I love the idea of a Briggs. I said, I bought a Torini because I couldn't get a Briggs at first. And I'd be quite keen to try one. And he said, leave it with me. And not too many people would know this, but the next day I received a phone call from IKD to say, what's your address? We're sending you an engine.
Yep.
And I got given a Briggs engine, which I then raced for half a season. And I tried everything I could to make it as fast as a Torini. I can tell you it's not as fast as a Torini. And ultimately, the Torinis only seemed to get quicker and the Briggs just didn't. But the Briggs engine is beautiful. It's got a better carb. It's got a lot of stuff on it. It's really good. A lot of things make a lot of sense. But it's only going to work in a one-make environment. And same, the Torini really only works in a one-make environment anyway. And look, that's what we've ended up with in KA now, because the Briggs is not having its homologation extended next year. But Briggs also gave me the leg up when I said, hey, I want to become a dealer. And they basically said to IKD, give this guy an account. So I managed to get myself an IKD account. And off the back of that, proved my sales enough to get a St. George account. And off the back of that, eventually proved that I had enough sales to get myself a DPE account. And I appreciate each and every one of those opportunities. And it's been interesting over the years, being able to get more access to things. More recently, being able to get access to Patrizzi stuff as well. But DPE are the only dealer that's really collaborative with me in terms of, hey, what do you think of our product? What's working? What's not? What do we need to do to our cart to make it work? What do you want in the cart? What do you think of this tyre? What do you think of how this is going to work? Where do you see this going in the next year? Are you happy with how the engines are fitting on our go-karts? Do we want us to change anything? Let's look at doing a different engine mount plate, which DPA are looking at, and various other things as well. So being involved has been great. I had the opportunity from early last year to test the Arrow X, what is now the X6.1 chassis, which is what I race. And not only to test that, but to actually have it customized for myself. So I run the X6.1 senior cart, which is the proper CIK cart, the four spot brake, all of the good fruit on it. But I have it with a four stroke seat offset. So there's no offset on my engine. It's dead above the chassis rails. My seat's quite offset. And that is my cart of choice. And DPE build those specifically for me. Turns out there's now another dealer in New South Wales who loves it as well. And they build them for them as well now. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So, but, you know, having a company that I can call up here in Australia and say, I want a go-kart, but not only that, I want the seat stay welded on a different spot, or I want the seat stays welded on this many millimetres apart so I don't have to bend them when I put a seat in it.
Yep.
I can do that, and I get that out of the cart. And ultimately, like for me, I can sell pretty much any brand of cart now, and I choose to sell Arrows primarily. I love OTKs as well in terms of handling. But the reality is now, the X5, X6 type carts handle very similarly to an OTK, especially if you put a few OTK bits on them, hubs and various other things that you might want to do. The Arrow's easier to manage on a day-to-day basis. Brakes are easier to deal with, and the parts are cheaper if you bend anything. And the hubs aren't bound onto the axle and need to be belted off with a hammer every time. You know, just that sort of stuff. I just find them easy. Love it.
Yep. So that would And that the following question was going to be, would that be the best go-kart you've driven now, considering the outside of the emotional sentiment, is that the latest and greatest and the best one you've ever had?
It's definitely the best go-kart I've ever owned.
Yep.
Without doubt. The X5 was always amazing. I never had a problem with that. The X6.1, I just like that tiny bit more, but those two karts are almost inseparable. Before that, my favourite car ever to drive was Zahn's FA, when we got that built up.
Yep.
He was one of my best customers in terms of building a car, because he just goes, I want the best of everything. Like, I want this, I want that. We got to buy all these bits and pieces that I'd never bought before and built up what was just the most beautiful OTK. And he went out and did a few laps, and he wasn't quite sure on his times. And I went out and went, mate, that's the best go-kart I've ever driven. And I've always thought of... I always have in my mind, when I think of driving a good go-kart, what that thing felt like, just a nice, fresh OTK. And that was always good. But, yeah, in terms of a kart, yeah, I really liked the FA kart I had until I modified the seat stay on it to try and get the engine further inboard, to try and make more power out of the Briggs, because it's meant to cause less vibration within the carb and whatever else, but it actually ruined the handling of the kart. And I also really liked my old Arrow that I used to race back in the day with the 125 on it, but still nothing comes close to the karts I've got now. You know, I was going to say, it's almost like cheating. You know, it's relaxing to drive as far as a go-kart goes for me.
Yeah. Now, you've won a few titles and a few races, as we can tell by the background there.
Yeah.
Is there one that stands out to you, though, as the best title you've won? Is there anything, one that's memorable?
Look, I've got several memorable meetings. If you go way back in the day, like in my first year, there's a trophy up there from like a Festival State Cup round at Barossa. And it was the first time I'd won a big meeting. And when I got home, I realised the piston's broken, and that piston sits with that trophy. And I knew that I'd lost power in the final, but I managed to hold it together. And so that was unreal. In that same year, the River City titles at Go Kart Club of SA, when that was quite a big meeting, it's turned into just a club day these days. But back then, it was quite big, and it's actually a huge trophy up there. And I got turned around at the start of the race. The final was 18 laps of A track, Jamie, so it was a big long final, a 2-day race meeting. And I got turned around at the start of the final and still managed to get back and win it. And so come right through the field. So that was pretty cool. Once getting into the four-stroke thing, well, you know, I was just stoked to be in a position where we could race some meetings big enough to get a trophy. And that was awesome. And then T4 design trophy last year for the 4th estate title. This is sweet like sugar, this one. I designed and had the trophies manufactured myself. They've got my logo on them. It meant that I paid for a significant chunk of them as well. But the thing is with that is, there was no way that I was going to beat Paul Pittam home in that race meeting. And he had just been a class above in terms of pace or meeting. And a few things contributed to that. A, he's a dead set gun. B, little did I know, my engine was very much on its last legs. And quite literally in the very next race meeting, the first heat, which was the next time the engine got started, it seized on lap 3.
Oh, wow.
So... It had nothing.
Supermax.
Yeah, that was my first Supermax. It had done 11 hours. And so I obviously had an engine issue as well, but all credit to Paul. He was faster than me, 100% faster than me that day. There's no way I would have beaten him. On the final, heading up the hill straight after the turn 1-2, head up the hill on the right, jump the curb, drop the chain. Wasn't running T4 DSKs, no sprocket protection. And dropped the chain. I lost it under my helmet. Paul said he could hear me yelling for the next two laps, sitting on the side of the track. And you know, it was so sweet, because it was just like I've won the 4th Street State Trophy. It also happened because someone wasn't using a product I designed. It just all sort of fell into place for me. But needless to say, that cart got sprocket protectors put on it quick smart afterwards. But yeah, that was a pretty cool feeling. I loved that. That was great. But
to be fair to you, though, mate, it was a culmination of everything you put into it. And if there was ever a way that karma came back to reward you, that was it. And it was, I mean, you dominated the rest of the series that year, so it would have been criminal not to walk away with this. Like, you dominated Festival State Cup for the most part. Yeah. It would have been criminal for you not to walk away with the state title in that class as well, let's be honest.
Yeah. I'm glad it ended up that way. I realised that I was a bit hamstrung by my engine that year. So for those playing along at home that haven't quite worked out what perhaps happened within Supermaxes in South Australia is that there was basically a point in time where Torini had issues with components within Supermax. I believe it to be mainly to do with connecting rod issue tolerances to crank. But that, amongst other issues which Torini later identified, including the billet side cover on the Supermax not being manufactured to the right spec from the CNC shop. So basically the crank wasn't being held straight in them. And look, we had a lot of failures. Well, we had a lot of failures. We had four failures, I think, last year within a fairly short succession. And it could have just about sung the end of the class. And I made a phone call out to Torini myself and just said, look, guys, can you help us out? And they were really great about it. You can say what you like in terms of the engine being poorly put together or whatever it was. They took all the engines back. They rebuilt them all and they sorted us all out. And everyone ended up with a fresh engine for the start of the next season, basically. And of those, we have actually had one of those people did have an issue with the replacement one, and they Torini actually refunded them in the end. So, but you know, my relationship with Torini is great in that, you know, we can talk honestly about what the engines are doing, where things are at. They're very understanding of what goes on with the engines. If people are reasonable with them, they can be quite reasonable in terms of looking after you as well.
Yeah.
I've got two Supermaxes here at the moment that I race. Well, I've really just raced one. I keep a spare one at all times, which is just for any competitor who has a failure. So I wanted people to have confidence in the class. So I carry a spare Supermax with me to the track every race meeting. And it's there. If anyone has a failure, bang, you just drop it straight on. It's ready to race. And that's a quick one. Good. But, you know, so that I think that's given people a bit more confidence again. But in terms of the class, years of campaigning for heavier weights in four-stroke has actually probably hurt Supermax a little bit now, because the Club Max heavyweight is far more sensible, which means it's less attractive to head up to Supermax, which is kind of what I want. I want people to know that they can race an engine based on what they want to spend on an engine and how much horsepower they want rather than on their waistline. I don't want to be forced up to a heavier engine just because I'm heavy.
Mate, you and I have had chats many a time offline in terms of how often I've been thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, God bless me with a big ass and big quads, and therefore the engine doesn't necessarily stack up in my favour as well. So having it,
if you want to try it for race meeting, there's a spare one here, aren't you?
Very tempting, buddy. Very tempting.
Bring the cart around, I'll lob it on for you.
Yeah, might even have to get those sprocket protectors as well too. So.
Plenty in stock at the moment. And, always managed to keep plenty of those. I do have to make quite a large batch at a time, but they're actually CNC milled here right in Adelaide. So, you know, when I need more, I don't have to wait for them to be shipped from overseas or anything like that. It's just great.
We've got some big meets coming up. In particular, Ultimate Club Driver. Yeah, I know. I'm glad Ultimate Club Driver's back.
Yeah, so am I. And I hope it's got the atmosphere and the feel of the last one. Anyone was there knows how awesome that was. It was a brilliant race meeting. So are you on. Good.
Yep.
Four straight nationals, AKC for people that aren't in AKC, really. It was just, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It was a great weekend.
Yeah, and I hope that they manage to bring that same vibe to Monado. I think we're really lucky to have it in SA again. Go-Kart Club of SA are really starting to put their preparation into that now. I know their last meeting, they started talking about what they're going to do and working through that, getting some activities on. They're really going to encourage camping at the track. I know that the club's going to be chucking on, you know, a bit of a party basically on the Saturday night, you know, get food going and everything for everyone that's staying around. They do a state of origin thing for anyone that didn't go last time. I know you were there, Jamie, but, you know, you pick your best drivers from each class and you all go head-to-head with the other states and you go to see which state can win a karting event. And everyone else that's there racing goes and watches that event. You put your best men forward. It was a great time. I look back very fondly on that weekend.
Yes, I know Torini every so often like to remind us about that event with the infamous start line photo. So, I've had more air time with people seeing the back of my card airborne, and you're going backwards on the start finish line than would I have victories, that's for sure.
That was all Mitch Branson's fault.
To this day, I still don't know how you avoided hitting Dave Rinaldi fair and square in the snow.
There are so many different angles of that crash, and I don't know how I avoided him. There was nowhere to go. I mean, that's what happens. That was a start line on a fast start, 32 four-stroke carts or something, all on track at once. And the straight's, 15 metres wide? The carts look six wide. I'm running down the inside with three go-karts to the left of me. And they did things. And then I had nowhere to go. Ultimately ended up sitting on the track backwards and hit very hard by a fast-moving Jamie Lemura.
Fast trying to avoid you.
That is the only time I've ever been winded in a go-kart too. That's all right. Quick axle change and we were back at it, mate.
Did I feel like shit after, though? Like, it was just miserable that coming straight. I didn't know what happened. And then I saw you coming off and I thought, oh, man, I've just clobbered Tim. And, you know, my axle was like, I had to get an angle grinder and get mine off.
Craig ran around and got you sorted, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and Michael Petruzzi was generous enough to give me a second-hand axle as well, just to make me finish the weekend. So, but I'll never forget, I concur with everything you said about the atmosphere. I'll never forget the buzz in the build-up to that final. You know, there was just something in the atmosphere that was just really cool. And I came away from that weekend thinking, man, that was a buzz. I really want to go back. You know, I was been hanging to get back to this event, so I'm really looking forward to getting back there, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm just hoping they can keep the vibe the same. You know, with Monado, it'll be great. We've got the state trophy as well coming up, Bolivar. Yep. A few more Festival State Cup rounds to go. Mm-hmm. I'm already booked in some accommodation for Mount Gambier, so I'm definitely following Festival State Cup through to the end of this year.
Yep.
Hoping to see... I really want to enjoy the last Festival State Cup. There are some whispers on the grapevine that four-stroke won't be a part of it next year.
Nonsense decision, mate, if you want me to. And you know what? I'll be the one that'll be forthcoming and telling it how it is. If Karting South Australia actually move forward with that, considering that four-stroke is pretty much a third of the field for Festival State Cup, it's a ludicrous decision. Ludicrous.
But we take up so much track time, Jamie. We take up all the track time with all our entries.
Oh, yeah. All our interest, mate. We're no faster or we're no slower than having another cadet class on track.
Exactly. Whatever.
Look at the lap time.
Ultimately, yeah. So, hey, this is the other thing, right? Cadet 4SS. Cadet 4SS is going to happen. That's the next thing. That's my next mission. Cadet 4SS is happening in SA. We, I reckon there's three carts now that are in private hands that couldn't race. The restriction on chassis was removed at the start of the year. People are able to run any cadet kart now. And it's been quickly proven by Des Harrell that a cadet 4SS is faster than cadet 12.
I know. Which was it? Was it a Bolivar? I can't remember. Was it Bolivar or if it was at Monado?
At Monado the other week, Des smashed the cadet 12s in the fourth stroke. He had to start read. They're like, oh, you're in a 4SS. You have to start at the back. There's like 13 cadet 12s and he got through to second every single time. Like he almost got to the front.
Yeah. Lee actually saw when he was at Southerns Racing and he brought the Sprintmaster out.
Yeah.
He actually saw that four stroke up against the cadet 12s. I couldn't believe just how good it was.
So fast with no weight on them, right? There's so much torque. So it's the cadet engine is not really any slower than the senior engine. It's slightly slower, but it runs really clean. The only reason it runs a different carby is to give more tire clearance. It's not because it's governed for kids. It's just to get the thing fitting on the carts better. And so they're quick as. And little Levi Ross has been running around in one. I think he enjoys it more than his two-stroke. Des Harrell, he seemed stoked the other week after his.
Yeah. No, I've seen them doing some testing at Southerns in the past, especially going around that final sweeper. Super fast. If you're looking at this thing and it's visually, it's like, wow, this thing's moving. Like, it's going so quick.
So Go-Kart Club of SA have really ramped up their cadet program now as well. They've got six carts out there that they can run around cadet four strokes. John Sakura's out there now running that program most of the time, and he's just loving it and just imparting that karting fun and wisdom on kids, and just seeing kids get quicker and quicker. And then ultimately getting to a point where their parents might choose to put them in a go-kart to race, and hopefully they come through into the cadet world. But the parents of the cadets that have tried the four strokes are saying, why are we racing mini rocks? Why don't we just race these? It's like, they're so good. But we'll see what happens. I'll be interested to see if it gets a go. I'd love to see Ultimate Club Racer get up with a cadet field of four strokes in SA. I'm sure I can convince Go-Kart Club of SA to lease out some of their carts as well. We did have an agreement to do that for the state trophy last year, but ultimately no one took us up on it. So, but I think it's a pretty cool opportunity.
Yeah. It'd be great. Do you know what track configuration for those that are going to be listening interstate that might want to make the trip over?
I'll almost certainly be a track in the standard direction, which is anti-clockwise. I'd be very surprised if it's anything but that. And being a KA, like a level event, will almost certainly be an A track event. You can find plenty of YouTube footage of various people going around. Guys like Steve Skinner putting up A-grade quality footage of Go-Kart Club of SA these days, usually from a 360 view. And, there's some great stuff coming out of his editing suite there. He tells me it takes him a week to edit his videos after a race meeting, so it doesn't surprise me at all with the quality that's coming out.
Oh, man. Yeah, now Steve's actually going off to Italy, I think, pretty soon. He's going to Europe, I think.
I didn't know that he was missing a race meeting. I think he's missing one of the meets, yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be, he's put his name down for the Festival State Cup, so I'm not sure which one it is. But, yeah, he'll be jetting off to Italy, and I think he'll be back just before Ultimate Club Driver.
He's one that always blames me for getting stuck into karting. He made my weekend standing under a tent at the very last Super Loop 500 worth it. Dave and Steve coming up to me, and Dave convincing Steve that they needed go-karts, and they managed to snag a couple of the Celebrity Challenge karts from the Australian Grand Prix. The ones that never really got the airtime they deserved because the Grand Prix got cancelled in the morning of practice. And everything. Yeah, DPE put this huge investment into 12 carts, get Celebrity around Todd Road and get the big airtime, and then never happened.
Never happened.
The event happened. The event happened. It just didn't get the airtime it should have, you know.
Yeah. Dave's come a long way. He's very, very quick at the moment.
Ever since that race meeting where he sat with Brett in the enduro, he's just got faster and faster, and he's a weapon on track now.
Yeah, super quick. I'd put him as a smoky of winning state titles, I reckon, in the Eddies. Smoky, because it's at Southerns. If it was a Monado, probably Bowden,
Daniel,
I'd say. Mm. Yep, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Looking forward to a track extension at Southern.
Yes. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they haven't. To my knowledge, they haven't actually come out with a finalised layout yet. Steve Skinner's had a lot to do with that in terms of the track layout. Which is really cool. It'll be super fast once, because they're going to reconfigure Wakefield, and they're going to extend Wakefield going into the...
I saw some of the early concepts, right? So the fact that you're going to... Basically, Wakefield moves and turns into a 90-degree corner where it is, so then you're going to enter the S's so much faster.
Yeah, absolutely, which in a four-stroke would be great. But in a two-stroke, it'd be gnarly.
You'd be really white-knuckling through there, I think. But I'm really looking forward to that. I started my racing at Bolivar and loved it, but turn one there has cost me a lot of dollars over the years.
Yeah, turn one Satanist. I concur with that. That's given me a lot of blushes too.
There's been some big bills coming out of Aaron Bent go-karts.
Jesus, yeah, I know. I know they're really desperate to try and hold on to the character of that first corner, but they can't for safety reasons and that sort of thing. It is going to be reprofiled a little bit. To what extent, I'm not too sure. But that's kind of characterised Bolivar in many respects as the entry into that first corner, because you can almost guarantee it's something to happen.
There's nowhere else in SA where you have to judge your breaking point and break that hard. And you know what? It's a great test of skill.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
It favours the guys, people like Biscuits who can back the thing in there. If you can slide your go-kart in there 90 degrees to the corner, you do well, right?
Oh, yeah. He's 45 degrees. There's all sorts of smoke and stuff going on. But it's actually really cool to watch because he can pull it off.
He still gets through that quickly. But there's a bunch of people that can do it. I mean, even people like Matt Hall. Matt slides the car in there hard and flies through.
But great track, and hopefully the extension does make it better. Yeah, I think so. It'd be something different, you know, something new test, because I think everyone's sort of finalized the setup around Bolivar, where they can go out and just roll it out of the truck and they're more or less there or thereabouts. So this will add a new element until people get used to it again as well. But yeah, that should be ready by January, they're saying, January, Feb next year.
Oh, that'd be just wonderful. Something to look forward to.
Absolutely. Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you very, very much for your time. And no doubt, I won't see you on the racetrack now until probably state titles. So I did notice that Festival State Cup was held on Father's Day. So put a line through my name for that. But yeah, we'll see each other on the track, no doubt, very, very shortly.
Yeah, I look forward to it. And hit me up when you want to drive that Supermax, mate. It'll go on your go-kart, quick smart.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be a better fit for me, that's for sure. So don't worry, I'll be hollering.
Yeah, we've got a good little field.
Yeah, yeah. The thing I've missed has been just the camaraderie out on track while I've had COVID and eye issues and all sorts of stuff. So when I do come back, I can't wait to get back out there and just mingle and enjoy it.
New job, new man.
Yeah. Yep. The eye, you know what, man? It was the eye injury where I was pretty much legally blind.
Yeah.
You sort of sit back and have a really good think about things, and it gives you a different perspective about what you take for granted. And, yep. You know, for me, it's like, you know what? I just want to enjoy it, you know, because, you know, my vision could go at any time. If I get another cold sore in my eye, like I did this time, because I'm able to get them again, then I might not get my vision back. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's that bad.
Let's have none of that.
Yeah,
racing exactly. A go-kart without depth perception is difficult also.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of, to be honest. It can be done, but that's why I'll hit the test track first before I race, because I don't want to jeopardize anyone or myself for that matter. So yeah, no heroic stuff here, just put along nicely and get on with it.
It's been great to be on, Jamie, and thank you for everything you've done within the karting space as well, because everyone's played their own parts in getting this up and running, and I'm really proud of what everyone's done in terms of getting Four Stroke into what it is, not just in SA, but the rest of the country. And I met a lot of good friends and made a lot of lifelong friends throughout it as well. So it's been a great deal.
Yeah, mate. If we didn't love it, if we weren't passionate about it, we wouldn't do it. We wouldn't throw our weight behind it. So. Thanks, buddy, and thank you for your support for the show as well. Really appreciate it.
No worries at all.
All right, mate. We'll leave you to it. We'll see you around.
Cheers.
See you, mate.